Today's show brought to you in partnership with our friends at TaylorMade and Medallion Racing. TaylorMade Partnerships provides an unmatched entry and experience into both the racing and breeding side of the thoroughbred industry. Now you can be a part of a top-level racing and breeding operation with all the rewards and less risk and cost. Medallion Racing has enjoyed great success through the years with 66% of starters running in graded stakes and 25% in grade ones. Last year, Medallion was fortunate enough to have an impressive 4 Breeders' Cup starters. Similarly, on the bloodstock investment side, they've discovered great value. Buying and selling such standouts is Improbable, Bast, Cutting Humor, and Flame Away, among others. Join us and experience the thrill with TaylorMade, your family. Check out more. TaylorMadeFarm.com. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. This is our show for Friday, April 15th, Good Friday. In fact, Easter weekend is upon us, and we are going to kick on with two guests giving us their early thoughts on the two huge races coming up now in just a few weeks' time. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatel, back with you, not in the Brooklyn bunker, but at the, I don't know what this is. It's the Cummings Estate in Lexington, Kentucky. And I am very happy to be joined by a guy who has proved very popular in his appearances on the In the Money Media Network over the last year or so. We've had him on for our live events, and we're going to have him on regularly now throughout the summer. A lot of times taking a look at the Philly and Mare division, which he knows inside and out because of his job as a racing manager with Medallion Racing, who we're proud to partner with. You heard their spot a little bit earlier. Anyway, great to have back with us Philip Shelton. How are things?
Yeah, thanks, Pete. I appreciate it. Doing good. Just getting ready for a big weekend with in due time, hoping to add his hat into the ring for the Derby. So we're looking forward to it on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a minute, and then we'll talk about him in another segment, in another video, or later on in the show, depending on where you're watching this. We'll have Eric Solomon join us, and then got some other great content as well going to be coming up later on. But very happy to kick off this week's show, as we do so often. Not doing the stakes roundup this week, doing something a little bit more general with the man from his own eponymous podcast, TV's Matt Bernier. Matt, how are things?
Good, Pete. Phil, good to be chatting with you as well. And like you say, typically we do a little bit of a stakes roundup leading into the weekend, but not to downplay the two big ones at Keeneland on Saturday. Yeah. A little bit of a quieter week than what we've had in the past few weekends. So good time to kind of give a 30,000 feet kind of view of things.
The calm before the storm. And of course, yeah, regular viewers and listeners to Matt's show are going to be pretty familiar with his thoughts. We'll get a précis of them here. We encourage folks to check out the Matt Bernier show, obviously, and you'll get a whole lot more and be able to go a whole lot deeper. And it's going to be real easy to bounce around from these shows to Matt's shows if you are watching on YouTube. But Matt, what are your thoughts as it stands now? Do you have your Derby horse picked out? Do you have a potential strategy as far as the Kentucky Derby goes?
Yeah, and you know what? It's probably not the most interesting one, but if you recall going back to, boy, it must have been before the LeCompte, I said if the Derby were run on Saturday, I would pick Epicenter, and not a lot has changed since then. I just think he's the complete package. He may not be the flashiest thing you've ever seen, but I love his versatility. He can go to the lead. He can sit just off. He's run as fast, if not faster, than anyone else in his generation, and that's, I guess it depends what kind of figures you want to use, but I think it's at least arguable that he is one of the fastest, if not the fastest. And I think he's in the right hands with Steve Asmussen and presumably Joel Rosario going to be taking that mount. So I think Epicenter is the horse to beat. The only other one, and I said it last week on the triple cast when we did the shows, I was down at Aqueduct. I said, I think barring something crazy happening, I thought the Derby winner was coming out of the Risen Star. I said that last week on the show as well. And we saw those two horses run 1-2 down at Keeneland. I thought they were both very impressive. But barring something crazy happening, well, I don't know if it's too much too soon, but something kind of crazy happened in California with Taba. And there's a part of me that does genuinely believe he may be a Justify level, American Pharoah level kind of talent. The question is, you know, is 6-10 in a matter of 8 weeks just just a bit too much to ask. I hope the horse is going to be all right. But if for whatever reason he's, you know, good to go, he is absolutely one of the horses to beat the first Saturday in May.
Philip, we're going to bring you in, and we're going to start not with the general big picture question, but with a very specific question about a horse you mentioned before in In Due Time will be running this weekend. I just want to hear a little bit about how you guys got involved with this horse. Anything you can tell us about what he's been doing and what the thought process is on him from here for Medallion and your partners over at Edge Racing.
Yeah. You know, the big thing for us is that, you know, we almost exclusively have fillies. It's just a very weird kind of thing, but a bunch of our partners have expressed interest and said, you know, hey, if the right colt came along, we would love to do it. We bought a two-year-old last year named Vodka and Water, who we ended up having a bunch of fun with over the summer. That was a way different level than this. They're like, oh, you know, a Derby dream. And I just tell them, I'm like, hey, you know, normally the price, what you think is an aggressive price is actually completely non-realistic in getting anything done. So normally you get priced out on any of these things. A lot of that is their stallion potential, et cetera. But once he won his race at Gulfstream, when he won the one turn, the one turn allowance, and you know, everybody had been kind of pumping up the Pletcher horse in there, Ironworks. I think maybe even had two in there. It came back fast on a buyer number, came back fast on a sheet number. We have a relationship with Edge as a part of my racehorse. They just sell larger pieces as opposed to the fractional shares. But we own Going to Vegas with them. We own Street Band with them. We have a relationship. And we had tried to buy a couple of other Derby horses for a couple of other clients. So we kind of knew what the market was. And we just think we hit a sweet spot where it was a good deal for them. They got to pare down some. Some of their guys got to take money off the table. We got to buy it at what, you know, felt like wasn't just an astronomical price, at which the only way we'd ever make money is if he wins the Derby. And what I tell everybody, I said, in that case, just follow the horse and bet like 15 or 20 grand to win on him, because you're not going to dilute your odds in the Derby. And if you lose, you lose 20 grand. And if you win, you might win 500,000 or 600,000. Instead, you're not losing, you know, million plus by buying the whole horse. But it just worked out. You know, he ran huge in the Fountain of Youth. We just decided long-term for the horse, we'd asked him to do a lot. You know, we first started around two turns against graded stake horses, ran really well. We just wanted to give him a little bit more time. I think we were between the Bluegrass, the Wood, and the Lexington. Ultimately, the lack of Tex Sutton, you have to like van from Florida to New York, or you have to fly to Memphis, offload. Just the shipping to the Wood was just not a great plan for us. And I think Kelly's kind of like, you know, at this time of year, Aqueduct, like, I don't know if it's the best service that he wanted to run him on. He felt like he would do handle Keeneland better. And ultimately, we just defer to Kelly. Like, you know, we're happy to voice our opinion, but he's got to make the final decision. But he's been doing really good at Keeneland. I think that the big thing is just he's got the natural speed to sit close. So we're drawn in two on Saturday in an 11-horse field. He's going to have to be in a pretty good position. You don't want to get shuffled back, and it's just going to be can he get a split, and hopefully, Paco doesn't create the split out of nowhere.
Let's talk about the bigger picture of the Derby scene. You're going to be part of that Final Answer show. We're going to be streaming it live on May 4th. There may be an opportunity for some people to attend that if you're here in or around the Lexington area as well. But so that'll be the Final Answer. This is your first answer. From this far out, your own horse accepted, where are your eyes drawn for this year's Kentucky Derby, Philip?
I've got multiple future pool bets on Epicenter. So selfishly, and that's even somewhat selfish because we stand the sire. You know, he's by Not This Time, who also is In Due Time. So we just paid a lot more attention, but he won the Gun Runner. You just did it like a horse that could have some serious upside potential. I think the first pool, he's like 52-1 or something. So I've got, I'm not going to need to bet him on Derby Day. Like, I'm going to have plenty of action to Epicenter. So I'll be cheering for him. I think when I look at the Derby, you have to have so many things go right. Like, if you really take the race last year, you know, Essential Quality was probably the best horse. And he really didn't even have that bad of a trip, and he ran fourth. You know, I mean, he was in the clear the whole way. He's just wide. And you look at the horses that ran 1, 2, 3, and when Dina Spirit was on the rail, he went gate to wire. Mandaloon saved ground the whole way, and Hot Rod Charlie saved ground the whole way. So the best horse ran fourth with really not too many things going wrong. The year before, I think, you know, like I loved Honor AP, and I mean, he just was done. And he ended up running huge to be fourth, and you could really make a case he might have run the best race in there, but you just have to have so many things go right. And I love Zandon. Like, I think the turn of foot he showed, he doesn't have to be that far. You know, it's like deceptive. He was sitting second in the Remsen when he arguably could have been put up to win over Mo Donegal. He just got shuffled back at Keeneland. So it's like, people are like, well, he was last. You know, do you really want to horse with that style? But I don't think he needs that trip. But I just think I want horses that can make their own luck and they don't need as many things to go right. And to me, Epicenter feels like that horse. Like, he's got good tactical speed, doesn't need the lead, which I think was nice to see in the last start that he can rate a little bit. But I think he's just going to have the ability to put himself in a good spot. And, you know, you just have to hope that you draw well enough that you're not, you know, either going to have to be down on the inside where you really have to go, or be drawn super far outside where you're going to have to be more aggressive early. But to me, he's the most likely winner. I think there are a couple other horses. I think Tyba obviously is a monster. I like Zandon. I just think with the turn of foot and acceleration, and I think Pratt is, you know, the only person I think riding better than Pratt right now might be Rosario, who's going to be on Epicenter. So
let me ask you guys. I'll ask you first, Matt. Now, I think we can probably all agree that Epicenter would be the best horse with the most credentials that Steve Asmussen has taken to a race like the Kentucky Derby. But you're going to hear a lot about this stat, 0-22 or whatever it is with the Asmussen runners in the Derby to this point. Does it give you any pause, Matt?
Me, personally, no. I mean, kind of to Philip's point, I mean, it's part of the reason that I have sort of a love-hate affair with the Kentucky Derby is that I don't think the best horse always, never mind wins, has the best, gets a chance at running, you know, simply because of luck and the way things go. So that's why, for me, I do have a bit of a love-hate relationship with it. But as far as Asmussen is concerned, I mean, it'd be one thing if it was a trainer who had never been on the biggest stage and had never won anything, you know, of this caliber. I mean, we said it last week with on NBC. I mean, Asmussen has won everything there is to win but this race. So I'm not concerned about his ability to have a horse ready to go. I think it's just honestly a matter of time. And maybe this is the time. Maybe this is the horse that he needs. You know, for a number of different reasons, you go through and look at some of the other horses he's had run. Gunrunner wasn't Gunrunner at that point. He was a really good horse, but he wasn't the superstar that he turned into. To me, at this point in the game, this is the most complete horse he's had as far as the classic is concerned. And again, maybe it'd be one thing if it was someone who had never been in the spotlight before. Steve's done this a few times. I'm not worried about an 0-22 number.
While I have you guys, I want to pivot and take a quick early look at the Kentucky Oaks, which is shaping up to be a just fantastic race with, I would say, at least four who in a normal year could, with their resumes, could be clear favorites in the race.
Yeah.
Very curious, and Matt, we'll kick it to you to start this off. Do you have a horse this far out that you like to win the race? And who do you think is going to be the favorite?
So this is the one, honestly, I'm more excited about the Oaks than the Derby. And I think there are many people that kind of fall in this category as well. I don't have a single horse that I'm necessarily keyed in on. In a weird way, the worst thing for me that happened was Nest running the way that she did, because I had loved her. I think she actually debuted during one of our happy hours last year. Yeah. And visually, she's the kind of horse that always looked good, but she really hadn't run that fast.
Yeah.
And then she did what she did at Keeneland last week or 2 weeks ago. And now, you know, sort of the magic dust is gone, because she would have been 15-1 or something like that. And now she may be vying for favoritism. So I think it's a fantastic race. You know, the Secret Oath piece, I know many people are going to look at it and say, you know, she is one of the horses, and she certainly is. Someone, a commenter on my show, brought something up that I hadn't really considered, and maybe I'm starting to think about it more and more. You know, I genuinely believe she has a turn of foot on dirt, which is not common. I feel like that's, you know, it's an overused phrase, but turn of foot to me is a turf horse that quickens, not a dirt horse that just slows down slower than everybody else does. She has a burst on dirt, But somebody brought up the idea of distance with her being possibly an issue. And I hadn't really thought about it. You know, you see Arrowgate and you don't think it's going to be an issue. But her mom was more on the sprinty side. And when she shows that big turn, makes me wonder at a mile and an eighth, is she going to get a little bit short at the end of it? And possibly you have other horses who may be doing their best running at that point, whether it's Nest or, you know, Kathleen O or someone like that. So that would be my only trepidation with Secret Oath. But I think talent wise, I mean, the field of fillies, honestly, it might be one of the best oaks we've ever seen before.
Philip, when I first thought about how we were going to deploy you as a part of our content this year, I thought about, you know, the success you've had, particularly on the shows with the fillies and mares. And I was like, oh yeah, it'll be great to get Philip's early idea on who's going to win the Oaks. He's going to have a good opinion on that. So who's it going to be?
I mean, this year it's just like you guys hit on. I mean, to me, it's just how is the race going to be bet? I mean, what I would say is historically my worst performing bets of all time are in like maiden claimers and the Kentucky Derby. So in general, I don't even go crazy because I'm just like, would rather go play craps with my money and have maybe more fun and feel like I at least got to roll the dice for a while. In the Oaks, I've done them, you know, a lot better. I mean, remember we had the show last year. I was like, Malathon's my absolute strongest opinion of the whole year, basically. I think to me, Kathleen O is really interesting. I think there's going to be a fair amount of speed. Like Echo Zulu basically has never been headed. I mean, she was second early in her debut where she ended up winning for fun. But after that, she's basically been on the lead in all of her starts. Now, maybe she rates, but you got the filly coming from Oaklawn that got really brave winning the fantasy. You're going to have, you know, I don't know if like a Dare Manor is going to come. You're going to have some horses from California that are going to have speed. So to me, I would kind of agree, like Secret Oath, you know, I think she was on a wrong lead in the Arkansas Derby late. She got tired. Now, maybe he just didn't persevere with her either, and maybe switching to Saez is going to be a better call. She was also really wide, so maybe that had a negative impact. To me, Kathleen O's been the most impressive horse I've seen so far this year from the filly division. Just, you know, some of the races she hadn't gotten the right setup, she just continued to power, and she just looks like somebody that's going to absolutely relish a mile and an eighth. The one thing I would be mildly, you know, I think when you look at it, the Derby, you try to identify, like, what's the strong division? Where are the best horses? And I think the filly division, it's hard to do it because they don't run. Like, a lot of them really stay where they are, and they don't, like, you know, Ness went to Tampa and won the race at Tampa, then went to Keeneland. You got the horses in Fairgrounds kind of stayed at Fairgrounds, horses at Oaklawn State. So you don't really have a great read on not a lot of commingling because normally you're less worried about points. You know, you're if you're at the top, you can default to something else. I'm, like, mildly intrigued with Venti Valentine, one of our partners, Parkland Thoroughbreds, who's owned a bunch of horses with us. They're a partner in her. And just purely from a value perspective, like, she's run a race that's fast enough. She was basically heads up with Nest and the Demoiselle last year. And I just thought, well, I don't think Manny – I know they weren't happy that Manny left the rail open, and I think they're switching to Gaffleone for the Oaks. You know, she's a filly that's really better with a target. She just found herself on the lead in a mile and an eighth at Aqueduct and just – kind of felt to me like a horse that just started wandering, and then the Mott filly came up the rail, who's also intriguing to me. Like these Mott fillies, they can start to get good and really take leaps and bounds. But she's a horse I'm just intrigued by because I think she's going to get a way different trip in the Oaks. Like, she's going to sit off the speed, and she's at least proven that, like, if she gets that trip, she can run a race that could be fast enough. You know, I think both time form and buyers had her. You know, a really high number, I think faster than like what Secret Oats run this year. So she's a horse, I think, at a big price that's intriguing just because I think she didn't get a, not there's anything wrong, just the way the race played out last time, I think, was against her. And I think she's going to get a completely different setup on Oaks Day.
Good thoughts, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. You'll be hearing more from Philip as the Triple Crown season goes along. Again, he'll be part of that final answer show. Matt, you should be listening and or watching the Matt Bernier Show every single week. Anything else you got coming up this weekend to plug, Matt? We find some writing from you somewhere out there.
Yeah, NBCSportsEdge.com. But I mean, I can give it away. It's part of the show. We know we got some stakes action coming up. The Lexington, you know, to Philip's point, I don't think it's an easy race. And I think In Due Time is one of the most likely winners, but I think you can make a case for a lot of runners in there. My fear is that the favorites in there, whether it is In Due Time or Tawny Port, or even Pletcher's horse coming in, who I don't particularly love. I think they're going to be really, I don't want to say overbet, but they're going to be very short prices.
Yeah.
If you need a wild card in there, I think Dallas Stewart's horse is interesting. Strava. Horse is very green, ran down at the fairgrounds. They're putting blinkers on, paired up by her tops at 78. I think that one could be a little interesting, maybe not good enough to win. But if you're looking for a try or a super, something like that, maybe underneath. And honestly, I mean, I think there could be a superstar in that Jenny Wiley. I think Chantisara could be, I think she could be boss in that Philly and Mare Turf division as far as the East Coast runners are concerned. So we'll find out in time. Good.
Are you worried about the mile and a 16th at all?
Little bit. I mean, she certainly seems like one that wants to go a little bit farther, whether it is all the way out to a mile and 3/8 like she won out at Belmont last year. I guess the part of me looks at it and thinks if she can stay reasonably close, and it's a race that doesn't have a great deal of speed, I just think her turn of foot is legit. And Philip, you know, and Pete, you as well, you know, Keeneland's turf course can be kind of funny. And I just love that. I know it was over a bog last year in the QE2, but I love that she can handle the Keeneland turf. And not to say that, you know, Regal Glory can't, or any of the other fillies and mares can't in there, but I also think, too, I mean, it's worth keeping in mind. I mean, that's where the Breeders' Cup's going to be at the end of the year. And I assume they'll probably run it at, what was it, mile and 3/16 a couple of years ago. So, it'll be interesting to see. But I think from a talent standpoint, I think she might be off the charts.
We are going to go deep into this pick five in another video. If you're watching on YouTube, you should be able to find it fairly easily on the In the Money Media channel, where we ask you to like and subscribe. Leave us a comment. Whatever you want to do, we appreciate the support. Of course, it helps other people find the content we're putting out there on the channel. If you're listening to the podcast, it'll be coming up pretty much straight away. Thank you, boys. Very good catching up with you. Philip, you hang around for that other segment. Matt, we'll see you next week.
You got it, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Pete.
Today's show is also brought to you by our friends at Keeneland and Keeneland Select. As in the fall, they've got the Keeneland Turf Pick 3 back. It's been handling well. Last three turf races of the day offered daily. Tremendous quality in this stakes schedule. Overall on the meet, 15 stakes worth $7.7 million. Great allowance races as well. This is an action-packed meet, folks. And new Keeneland Select accounts get to receive a special $100 back after they wager $200 on Keeneland Racing this April. Wager a total of $300 in the first 30 days and earn another $100 back with the standard sign-up bonus. So $300 on the Keeneland Spring Meet, $200 back for new accounts. Just make sure you use the promo code at sign-up, ITM22. Go to KeenelandSelect.com and use that promo code ITM22. Next up on the show, we're going to dive into the races on Saturday. We have with us from our first segment still, Philip Shelton from Medallion Racing, TaylorMade. Philip, how are things?
Yeah, great, Pete. Thanks for having me.
And we also have a man who's been extremely busy over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. He's been doing a great job covering the Triple Crown for us in a creative and interesting way. If you haven't seen the Triple Crown content over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, go over there. You'll see it under where the shows are in the blog area, or you can search for his name. He is Eric Solomon. Eric, what's going on?
Oh, not much. Doing well, Peter.
You feeling good about the way the site's coming together with all this Triple Crown coverage we've been doing?
I think it's been fantastic. Everything's really kind of coming together very nicely.
Excellent. We encourage folks to check that out over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Put in a quick plug for our newsletter as well, which is the best way to keep track of all the content going on, written and audio and visual. If you just go to InTheMoneyPodcast.com/email, you can sign up for that for free and get that content delivered right into your email box. Let's talk about this pick five at Keeneland on Saturday, final day of the week with Easter being Sunday. So we've got to get our fill of Keeneland on Saturday. And this is a fun sequence with a few stakes races in. It kicks off in race number 7 with a 4 and up allowance race going 7 furlongs on the dirt. Eric Solomon, let's start with you and your thoughts on this one. What's going to be your approach as we kick off the late pick five?
All right. I looked at this race. I think Injunction's pretty good, who's the morning line favorite at 2-1. I ended up making a Candy Tycoon my top pick, though, the 4 horse. I like this horse a couple starts back. Since this horse has been claimed by Norm Cassie, I like what this horse has done. I thought had a really good race three starts ago, going a flat one-turn mile at this level at Churchill. Beat a nice field that day back in November. And since then, one decent race at Oaklawn, and then the last race, kind of a toss for me, had a tough post. It was a decent field. Market Analysis was the winner that day. Second place horse Goalie came back to win a nice race also in February at Oaklawn. So Cassie gives him a little bit of time off, cuts him back to one turn. I think he did a real nice trip in this race with Luis Saez. And then, like I said, Injunction, coming out of the Gulfstream Mile, how deep was that race with Speaker's Corner coming back to win the Carter? Fearless was a next out stakes winner out of that race as well. Two really good races, including one here at Keeneland last year, a dominating win to break the maiden in October. Followed that up with another really strong performance winning at Churchill at the end of the meet. That was another good non-winners of one other than allowance there. And the other horse that I'm looking at is trying to find a price horse in this race. I liked it, the 9, Basquiat. Second off a layoff, moved into Lisa Lewis's barn. This horse was mostly a turf horse back in 2020, one start in 2021. Dirt races back in 2020, met one on debut at the 7 furlong distance, met a really tough field back at Belmont in second career start. Tap It to Win won that race, but also Mystic Guide and Country Grammar came out of that race. Ran into Happy Saver when going two turns, going a mile and eighth at Saratoga. So I think certainly can get over the dirt. I liked the race last time out again at Tampa with clearing the non-winners of one condition. It's a big step up in class, but I think in a race where, could try to find a price, I think he's not the worst choice here.
No, and Basquiat is a pretty strong finisher relative to the group, and there is a lot of pace. Chance maybe they'll come back in this spot. Philip, let's bring you in for your thoughts on how we're going to light this candle in the late pick file.
Yeah, I would be pretty similar. I liked Candy Tycoon. I thought, there's some speed drawn directly outside of him. Maybe he just sits just behind them. I kind of defaulted, like what I would say, just from a pick five perspective. I have stronger opinions later, so I'm not going to get super brave in here. I mean, I think Injunction is definitely the horse to beat. Fearless came back at 1-5 and won his next start in Speaker's Corner. In a normal year, you'd be thinking, hey, it's going to be favored for the Met Mile, except you have two monsters who could be just absolute machines sitting in the wings, which could that could make that an unbelievable race later this year's. I kind of liked Hear My Song. This horse has gotten pretty good on the synthetic, but the dirt races weren't bad before, and I really just wanted somebody that is going to be finishing, isn't maybe going to sit a little bit further off what could be pace. Wednesday at Keeneland, it was a conveyor belt. Yesterday it played more fair, I think, horses that, could make an outside run and you would be fine. So I like that horse. What I'm hoping is that the 5-1 is, if he's 5-1, I wouldn't love to bet him heads up, but I think he could be, I think just lower level connections, you're probably going to get some odds floating. And I kind of landed there, but again, not going to get super, super aggressive in the first leg.
4, 6, and 8, it sounds like, for Philip. Eric's got it 4, 6,
yeah.
9. So plenty of agreement as we move to the first of our three stakes on the Saturday card. We're going 5.5 furlongs on the turf for 3 and up fillies and mares in the Giants Causeway Stakes. Philip, will keep it with you.
I mean, this is what Keeneland is right here. You get an Ascot winner coming back. You've got the fairgrounds forms really good. You got some speed from Gulfstream. You have a California shipper. There's a lot of different ways to go. I'm kind of hoping, I've been wanting to bet Jouster in a cutback for her whole career. I just felt like, hey, she just, hasn't worked really good as a 2-year-old. Now, I guess the question I would have is just, is she as good? There's some serious sprinting fillies in here. I ended up landing on Change of Control, and I hope I can get somewhere in 4 or 5-1. I just thought last time she didn't break. Race was dominated, on or near the early lead. There is some speed in here. And what I like is she can handle some given the ground. It's going to be 70 today, but there's supposed to be more rain overnight. The course is going to definitely be good at best tomorrow, I would think. And I just think she could sit the right trip. She can handle soft ground, and she likes Keeneland. So that and really this would be like a stronger opinion. I think when I try to think about sequences like this, there's a lot of different ways to go. And if I just figure, all right, I could go bet 100 to win on her or 200 to win, I might just single her in a pick five, have a couple different tickets, and just try to get alive to you know, courses later on. And you know, a lot of people are going to be spreading in here.
It's a smart approach, I think, and I'm with you on Change of Control being the really interesting horse in here. Has to reverse that form with LZ, but I think has an opportunity to do so, especially when you consider that last time Change of Control unprepared at the start, and now a better draw than LZ, who's a contender, but is going to have to use that speed. We'll see if she's maybe left vulnerable late to one who could maybe save some ground like Change of Control. We'll see how it plays out. But I also like your approach in terms of your multi-race strategy there as well. Eric, let's bring you back. And we've got two votes for Change of Control. Can we make it a chorus?
Yes. Everything Philip said, I've kind of written down on my notes here about Change of Control. And to me, and kind of, you know, similar strategy, I am squarely against LZ. I'm not going to be using her at all today. You know, when you take a look at her races, she is one half of her starts. So 18 starts, 9 races. Of those 9 races, 5 of them came at the fairgrounds. So when you take her out of the fairground, and she was second in 2 others in close races there. When she leaves New Orleans, she's just not the same horse. She's on the turf, I think 7 starts outside of New Orleans, only 2 wins, 1 second. Speed figures are much more ordinary. Speed horses struggled yesterday on this Keeneland turf course. Not a huge sample, but I think she's going to be passed late. So I'm not going to be using her at all. And I'm not really high on Wesley Ward's horse, Campanile, either. Hasn't won since winning in France back in 2020. Couple of starts here just hasn't looked like the same horse that she was back when she was a 2-year-old. So Change of Control, definitely for me. I thought AG Indy on the outside was an interesting horse to possibly add in here. Moved into the Todd Pletcher barn, tried the dirt, met just one time, who came back to win the Madison last week. So that's a total toss for me. Left California in pretty good form. 3 out of 4 wins and a narrow loss in her last 4 starts and turf sprints out there. If she can handle a course with a little bit of a give, that's going to be a definite question mark. So I definitely want at least 10-1 or better on her. But I think she's an interesting horse there from the far outside. Another horse I put up on there, Going Good, I thought might be a good horse to use here too. Went off form a little bit at the Saratoga meet, but had a really nice progression of races up to that point. Nice race, narrow miss to Toby's Heart here last year in the limestone turf sprint. Came back. I thought it was a good second for a first start as a 4-year-old, first start of the year at the fairgrounds. And she gets Tyler Gaffleone, who rides as well as anybody here. So 5 on top. And then the 11, I put the 11 on the A line, Going Good there. And then my B horse as number 14, AG Indy.
All right, I just have one issue with what you said, and we'll get back to Campanile for a minute. You say hadn't had a win since 2020. My bank account says different, Eric. We were put up in the Commonwealth Cup in Ascot.
You are correct. You are correct. Has not finished first.
I can't argue with that. I can't argue.
Hey, if that race was run in New York, the hurting that happened probably wouldn't have been DQ'd. So it doesn't matter. You know, at Ascot, if they came across 18 paths, it felt like, but New York, they would have let it go.
That was actually my biggest bet of the Ascot meeting, was that DQ would happen. I just couldn't see how they weren't going to, and they nearly didn't the way they there. But I got the money. I got the money.
It's always interesting just talking to people in Europe about it, and it's like in America, you just think, well, that's. There's no way this horse could stay up, right? It was a nose finish. You know, they came across, so there was bumping. Like, everything about it made you think it was going to be a DQ, but it's just a different beast. But in this case, this was exactly where the rules were applied appropriately. You know, you really have to make the strong case she was going to win, but I think the bumping happened at the time where it'd be hard to not make that case.
For the record, I will be saving with Campanella in the spot, though change of control, definitely the bigger fancy for me. Let's move on to race number 9, the grade 3 Lexington Stakes for these 3-year-old colts. Last chance to accrue points for this year's Kentucky Derby. Eric, who's your idea of the winner?
And I thought this race was, to me, the hardest race in the sequence. I ended up with Call Me Midnight. I like those two races at the fairgrounds, even though I'm not sure this horse wanted to go the mile in 3/16. It's Midnight Loot out of a First Defense mare. So I'm wondering if that mile in a 16th is going to be about, you know, where he runs his best races. I think could get, it's hard to tell, doesn't look like there's going to be a huge, there's going to be a ton of speed. And the outside post is going to be a little bit of a challenge here, but I just think it's coming out of better races than a lot of these horses. And it's kind of where I ended up with there. In Due Time is the other horse that I'm going to put on the A line. From a visual standpoint, I thought the last two races were really good. He was absolutely loaded in the Fountain of Youth, and, you know, Paco Lopez kind of does what Paco Lopez does sometimes and just kind of running up on heels. Tried to bully his way out, ended up clipping heels. I'm not sure how he didn't get disqualified there, but, it is what it is. You know, Kelly Breen, is very loyal, still sticking with him here. But draws well. I think we'll be able to sit a little bit closer because I don't think there is going to be as much pace on here. So I think could get the good trip. A couple other horses on the B line. I think Strava's a little bit interesting at a big number here. You look at that allowance race at the fairgrounds on the Risen Star undercard. Looks a lot better now when you look at Cyberknife winning the Arkansas Derby off of that race. It was first started two turns, and I don't think it was a bad effort. Got a little bit tired late. I think could improve here after, pairing those first two buyers for the start of the year. Again, Tyler Gaffleone rides there. 20-1, I think, it's about the price I'd want on that horse, but I think worth a shot here. Morning line favorite, Tawny Port. I'm not really sold on this horse. I'll probably save with this one on the C line. But again, that it was the one start beaten. The Risen Star, obviously, as good of a prep race as there's been this season. It was fifth beaten seven that day. We know finished in front of Slow Down Andy in that race, who came back to win at Sunland. Was decent behind Tiz the Bomb. I'm just not sold on this horse at 5-2 as, the potential favorite in this race. So 5-2, probably not. Odds float up a little bit, might start thinking, a little more playable for me.
A little more of a defensive use with that. Mm-hmm. Philip, let's bring you back in for your thought on the Lexington.
Yeah. So this one, obviously we own a piece of In Due Time. I'll just be singling him where I'm too invested to wish I could get out of some creative thing. But I just think ultimately, we looked at all the different Derby preps trying to figure out what we're going to do. And really what Kelly wanted to do, which is the way we manage the horses. We try to have a conversation with the trainer, but ultimately it's the trainer's decision. And we felt like, hey, we've asked a lot of him. He won his allowance first start at two turn or at a flat mile. We asked him to go two turns against graded stake horses, ran a huge second, was loaded. Yeah, I'd actually text Pete, I think, after the race or the day after when Twitter is going crazy. And I think ultimately, I think what kept us from being DQ'd was the fact that there was no really good conclusive video angle on the turn. And what I would say is because there was no conclusive angle, it looked like there was bumping that happened before. Now Paco probably definitely came out, and if he doesn't come out, maybe there's no clipping in heels, but it was incredibly tight way before Paco came out. It was probably the brick that broke the camel's back on top. So, but he's doing really good. I think ultimately we've talked about, do we switch? What do we do? Ultimately, what Kelly thinks is this horse is just a strong, aggressive horse. And he's like, Paco just gets him to relax. Like his final work, we were going to go 5/8 and then the track sealed. We have to call an audible. We're just going to work an easy half mile. And this horse gets plenty out of his training. So really we're trying to keep, you know, the powder in the keg. We're just trying, don't get to race day. Don't let him do too much. And, you know, right as soon as we break off of the half mile pole, we get unexpected company. A horse that's breezing 3/8 pops right in front of us. And this Paco just had him relaxed the whole way, never pulled, never tried. Like, it was just, it was slow, but it was exactly what we wanted. Like, we'd much rather have had a slow work where he's just relaxed, calm, but he's doing really good. To me, he's just way the horse to beat in here. I think Tawny Port, his dirt race actually isn't that bad, and it looks a lot better when you look at how everything's run out of there. In general, I just don't like – this feels like an afterthought, right? Like, he's got enough points to get in the Derby. They're like, well, you know what? Maybe we'll just run here and see if he really likes it, to see if we want to go to the Derby, which then I would just ask the question, like, if he does like it, then you're going to have, you know, three races in, you know, a handful of weeks. You know, it's just a weird thing. So in general, I just fade horses like that. But I thought Strava was somewhat interesting. I also think, like, Howling Time to me was intriguing at what could be a big number. He was a good 2-year-old. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't bet Del Roman's a lot of times with other people's money, especially down at Gulfstream, but he did win one at Keeneland. I think when his horses come up from South Florida, they definitely improve. This horse acted like he could be really good. And it's weird for me. Like, you look down there and I mean, it's just like, bullet work. I mean, it's like 58 and change, just all these incredibly fast works. You know, if I wanted to get creative, I think he at least is going to get the right trip. Like, I kind of liked Call Me Midnight. I just think he might be way too far back on a, you know, track that isn't going to favor that style. But for me, it's just single in due time, and I'll be selfishly cheering him on Saturday.
I ran into Kelly yesterday over at Keeneland, and he was a sponsor of our Gulfstream Park show. So this is an inside joke.
Okay.
Who listened to that? He said, "Hey, Pistol Pete," when he saw me, which made me laugh. But yeah, I mean, you have In Due Time makes a ton of sense. All the horses you mentioned, it's such an open race. Ultimately, yeah. I did some picks over for attheraces.com for the Keeneland cards and Aqueduct cards on Saturday. If folks want to get into those, I took a little shot with Major General, hoping that the morning line is lower than the price he's going to be coming off the debacle in the Tampa Bay Derby. And this was a horse that looked very interesting as a 2-year-old. And if you key off the Iroquois effort and build an improvement for age and basically just ignore the Tampa Bay Derby, saying, well, Pletcher decided he wants to persist with the horse, they're adding blinkers, maybe he's going to be a lot better today. Just a guess from me. This is a tricky and interesting race, but obviously, Philip, we wish you Godspeed with In Due Time in this one. Be a fun thing.
Yeah, thanks.
If you can get that. Get a
Yeah, it's weird. You know, we normally only have Philly, so it's kind of a weird – you know, we had some guys in our group that are like, hey, if we ever found a colt, we love a colt. And then we saw this and we're like, hey, you know what? This could be the right deal. Edge is a group of my racehorse. We have an existing relationship with them. We own Going to Vegas with them. We own with Street Band with them. So we were just kind of able to work out a deal that made sense for everybody. So some of our guys got in. So it's it'll be fun. It's a weird deal. Normally I'm like, you know, trying to get ready for the Oaks or get ready for some of the big stakes. And this is a whole different, everybody's of course now is like, well, it's just really easy to get Derby tickets if we make it. Like, I'm like, it's not easy and it's not cheap. So they're like, well, Churchill just gives, I was like, no, they give you 18 per horse. And you just wanted to bring 18 of your buddies. So it's not quite that easy.
All right, we just have a few minutes left in this segment of the show, and we don't want to give short shrift to the grade one, Jenny Wiley, short field, interesting race, 1/16 on the Keeneland turf for these fillies and mares. My opinion was that Shantisara might just be breathing different air than the rest of this field, but there's obviously other ways of taking a look at it. Eric, we're going to throw the ball back in your court to get your idea of what's going to win the Jenny Wiley.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same boat there. Her race in the QE2 Cup in October was sensational. You think about the litany of horses like this that Chad Brown has trained over the last several years, and she fits that mold for sure. To me, I think she could be worth singling here. I will back up with the other Chad Brown, Regal Glory, who obviously is a very nice a 6-year-old mare. Started to really run some of her better races last year. I thought, you know, her race in the First Lady was really good, losing narrowly to her stablemate who took him gate to wire that day. Two straight wins, grade one matriarch, Pegasus World Cup turf filly race. She certainly looked like the best in that race on paper and certainly acted like that on the track. I just think her stablemate might be a little bit better though.
Philip, what do you think about this one?
In general, I don't like being in this situation because I can't really split them. I think Shantisara might end up being better, but I think she actually might want a little longer or be better going a little longer. And I think that's kind of the thing that is holding me back from wanting to single. In general, in races like this, I would just want to have an opinion and really press one of the two and just figure that's how I can create value as opposed to just equal weighting on both, and which is what the vast majority of tickets are going to do. But in this case, like, I came into the draw without diving into the PPs and watching the races, and I was like, Regal Glory is going to be a single. I just think the distance is better. I think they both have good tactical speed. But I thought the way she won the Pegasus World Cup, she was a deserved favorite. It was not as strong as this race. But just not the way she did it. Showed kind of a different style and a really good turn of foot. And I wanted to single her, but I think really I'll probably end up just equal weighting them and moving on. And I think that the more I went back and watched Chantisara's races, the more I liked her. I think ultimately she might want a little bit farther, and maybe I'll 60-40 it or something like that just to Regal Glory. But I couldn't split them.
Let's move on to the nightcap, race number 11. We're in the allowance ranks, going 7 furlongs on the dirt with this field of 11. Philip, will ask you the key question. How are we going to get paid?
I mean, I just laugh at these races at Keeneland. I mean, it's just you get all these, you know, you get just monster after monster after monster. I mean, to me, Highly Motivated is hands down the horse to beat. And I'll tell you, the other reason I couldn't get off, I was equal weighting him, is I was telling everybody before the meet, I'm like, listen, just Pratt is coming in and he is going to school a lot of these jockeys. He's very, very, very good. And I made a fortune opening weekend. I remember there was a optional claimer 80, and there was a half sister to Into Mischief that Cox had, that Giroux rode. And he had another thing for Ike Thresh that had won like 3 races when Pratt was on. And you thought that one was going to go to the lead and the half to Into Mischief was going to rally, and it ended up being the reverse. But Pratt is just riding at a whole nother level. So this is a very tough race. This horse is coming off of a big layoff, but he is very talented, and I think he's going to fire fresh, and I don't want to spend a lot of money trying to beat. He's the horse in here that feels like he could be a grade one horse later this year. So to me, he was the one. I mean, I think if this horse ran really well, maybe you wouldn't go to the Met Mile just because it's so tough. You go to like the True North or something, Belmont Week. But to me, that he's this kind of horse. He feels like the one that has the most upside. You're not getting a great price. You're taking a layoff, all those things. But I just think Pratt will put him in the right spot.
Hard to imagine Chad Brown bringing him back short at a meet like this. I'm sure this is a stepping stone to other things, but you'd think he'd be pretty darn close to fully formed. Eric, is it as simple as Highly Motivated in the last?
I think so. I think that's my top pick. I agree with everything Philip said. I really liked this horse last year. The win on Breeders' Cup weekend in 2020, what was sensational. A little bit of a tough go in the Gotham, but I thought the Bluegrass was sensational. Pushing Essential Quality to the absolute max in that race. Obviously the Derby didn't go well, but I thought this was a horse that was going to win the, I thought he would be, you know, a really good horse for a race like the Allen Jerkins at, you know, 7 furlongs at Saratoga. Obviously that didn't work out. But I'm really excited to see this horse come back. I feel bad for some of the other horses in this race, because this is the second division of the first race in the sequence.
So yeah, yeah, that was a brutal.
And I mean, I'm looking. There's horses in here that aren't going to be on my ticket that I probably would have put on the A line if they were in the seventh race. You know, looking at Super and Sandwich, I would probably put. I might have made him the top pick if in the seventh race. You know, I think Chocolate Bar is a nice horse. I'm not going to be using him, but I think I would definitely use him in the seventh if he was in that group. The other horse I'm going to use here is Ducali on the A line. Another horse that I just really liked. I thought that maiden win at Saratoga at the beginning of the meet last year was sensational. We came back at the end of the meet and was in that crazy non-winners of one allowance race where Baby Yoda ran his eyeballs out and put up that monster figure. I mean, and you know, even though he hasn't run back to that number, I think that race holds up because Olympiad was second in that race, and that horse has come back and run some really nice races this year. Tried two turns, was a winner here. Probably going to be better at one turn, but handled going the 1 mile here last year. And I thought the race behind with Cody's Wish at the one turn mile to end his 3-year-old campaign was solid as well. I'm not sure he's the same caliber as Highly Motivated, but if Highly Motivated is a little bit short, I think he'd be the one to get the job done. Might offer, I'm probably going to offer a little more value. So I'm going to put that one in there. Maybe on deeper tickets, maybe a little look to Escape Route coming in from California. Did like his 7-furlong race back a couple, 4 or 5 starts back maybe at Santa Anita. Been going 6 furlongs, might be able to close a little bit here. But to me, he's more of an underneath horse.
All right, great stuff. We're going to let you guys go, but really appreciate your time and contributions. Eric, we're going to be seeing more about you, your blanket coverage of the Keeneland meet over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, special contributions to the Triple Crown Trail. And Philip, of course, you're going to be, as we mentioned up top, part of our May 4th Derby event once again, and with us all summer long, coming on periodically, doing some capping and keeping us aware of your opinions in those filly and mare divisions in which you've had such excellent opinions for the listeners and viewers over the years. We'll be talking soon, team.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Good luck to everybody on Saturday.
If you enjoy the content you get from In the Money Media, there's a few little things you can do to help us out. One, the easiest one, is to subscribe and like our various channels. The YouTube channel, becoming very popular. Also, our regular iTunes feed. Look for In the Money Media, like and subscribe. We would appreciate it. I mentioned elsewhere in the show, sign up for our free newsletter. Best place to get all the content delivered right to your inbox, inthemoneypodcast.com/email. And this is still a great time to sign up for In the Money Plus. We've got a lot of Kentucky Derby content coming down the line, special podcasts, special articles, grid picks from all the In the Money contributors. To learn more about that, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus, competitively priced at $15 for the month. You are going to earn out and then some. The attrition rate on this service, very low. People like it. You'll like it too. If not, you can cancel at any time. inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. Next up on the show, we have a returning guest. We like to check in with him periodically during the Woodbine season, which is about gout. Well, let me start again because I'm not speaking in proper words. 3, 2, 1. Next up, we have a returning guest. We like to check in with him several times throughout the Woodbine season, which kicks off this weekend. But we're not going to start there. We're going to start by talking to him about a championship honor that he won last night at the Sovereign Awards from Woodbine. He's Jim Lawson. Jim, how are things?
Things are great. I'm thrilled to be on the show again and really excited about getting started at Woodbine tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be a proper full season after the last couple of years and what you guys have had to endure over there. But first, let's go back and talk about Mrs. Barbara winning that champion 2-year-old filly honor at the Sovereign Awards. What did that mean to you as somebody who's so involved in Canadian racing?
Well, it meant a whole lot. I won't go through the entire story, but her second dam was a horse that my dad bought in 1980 named Eternal Search. Eternal Search went on to win 3 Sovereign Awards, won $650,000, was just a spectacular racehorse, won 17 stakes races. And then one of her foals was a mare named Destroy, who has 9 black type winners. Destroy was the broodmare of the year in Canada in 2010. After my dad died, I desperately wanted to keep this family going without success until lo and behold, this 22-year-old mare Destroy shows up at Keeneland in 2019. She was pulled out of the sale because there was it ended up being an estate sale, and I was desperate. And I went after the executors and bought a 22-year-old mare, and just to bring this mare back and retire her in Canada. And lo and behold, she's carrying a Bodemeister filly that ends up being named Canadian Champion 2-year-old filly last night. It meant so much to me to keep this family going, that the lineage has been there for 42 years, a great Canadian family. And so it was a very emotional night for me. I took a brave step of naming the horse after my mother, who had died 4 years ago, or a couple of years before the horse was born. So that's where the name comes from. So you can imagine it was a special night for me.
A great family tribute in more than one sense of the word. That's so, so cool. And now I got to be careful here, because we could go down a rabbit hole on this question, but I always love talking to you about your interest in the breeding industry. What do you got on the farm? What do you have coming down the pipeline? I'll tell you, you mentioned Mrs. Barbara maybe before the maiden win in one of your appearances last year. I know there were several listeners who followed and have been following her and have cashed some tickets. Curious to know if you've got anything you're excited about coming down the pike this year.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a Liam's Map colt named Stronger Together, who's one of the favorites for the Queen's Plate. He's in training in Lexington right now. We're excited about him. He's gained about 100 pounds. He was stakes place last year, and he fits well with the Canadian bred 3-year-old. So excited about him. And then 5 2-year-olds, including a half brother to Mrs. Barbara, that's training with Cassie in Ocala. And Mark is excited about the 2-year-old. His name is One for Chap. Also named, that one's a family name too, named after my dad, who I nicknamed Chap. And then got a Bolt Doro filly named Ghost Doro out of a Ghost Zapper mare that is doing extremely well in Lexington. And she's going to Gail Cox. And then I've got 3 nice colts that are going to sit at Tartt. So always hope springs eternal with 2-year-olds, as you know there. But reason to be excited about Stronger Together as the 3-year-old, and then 5 nicely bred 2-year-olds. So I'm excited about the year, in addition to being excited about Woodbine.
That's fantastic. I promise we're getting to Woodbine next, but I have to ask you, I know your record breeding to first and second year sires is very good, and identifying some of the under the radar ones. Without giving away the store, is there a first year or second year sire you're particularly interested in that horse players might want to be paying attention to?
Well, sure. I mean, listen, none of them are any secrets. You know, that I know, well, Bolt Doro's the first year sire this year in terms of racers. And I'm always looking to, as you know, Peter, to try and look for that bargain. Got one going to Silver State this year. Claiborne loves them. So, you know, there are a bunch of them out there. I've got a nice Mattoli yearling. A lot of the Mattolis are a little small, but I think they'll be runners. So there's always lots of bargain shopping, I think, and you hold your breath for a couple of years and hope they come out runners. But if you can get the confirmation right and the size right, you know, these good runners like Mattoli, they produce runners. So I'm excited.
And those looking to follow Jim's horses, they run in his Gnome de Course. It's Spruce Stable, right?
Yeah, Spruce Stable or Spruce Spark Stable. I have a partner on some of them. Yes.
Excellent. Great stuff. Let's talk about Woodbine. You mentioned the Queen's Plate, annually one of the highlights of the meet. We'll get to that. But how happy are you to be starting on time in 2022?
Well, I'm happiest again for our horse people. I mean, just the uncertainty the last couple of years, it's hard to get horses ready. It's hard to, so many of them are down south and they didn't know whether to ship north or not. And the stakes program was up in the air right till the very end. And this year, Everyone can plan. They're on their way in. We've got a great stakes program this year, and it should be another good year for Woodbine. Our brand is growing, and our the quality of our product. We've got lots of horses on the ground, and we'll be going full scale 4 days a week starting May the 12th, and we couldn't be in a better position right now.
Racing Thursday through Sunday. Give us an idea of the racing schedule in these first couple of weeks, and then when you get back to your typical plan for the remainder of the meet.
Yeah, we're going Saturday and Sunday, starting tomorrow, of course, and then we'll do that again. And then we're going to 3 days. And then the week of May 12th, we'll be at 4 days. We're going to run 133 days of live racing. We've got $17 million stakes schedule, and it's just going to be a great year. We've got, of course, we'll come to it, I think, Peter, with the winning you're in September is, for me, the highlight of the year from a racing standpoint. And we've got those three grade one races on that one weekend on the turf in September. And a lot of great program before that, including the Queen's Plate, which that weekend will be a good prep races for those races in September. We've built our program now with the Queen's Plate being in August, which I think works well for the Canadian bred three-year-olds to get ready to go a mile and a quarter. So I'm really excited about where we're at.
In terms of post times, when are they established for throughout the meet? Or are you going to be figuring that out as you go? I mean, I know they're traditional, 1 p.m. starts this weekend, but what do you have planned beyond that?
Yeah, that's a good question. We are, you have to be nimble in this business. And I like the fact that we are nimble. We're just looking at it now. Typically, we would start at 1 on Thursdays and often at twilight on Friday, often to accommodate TSN. We have a national racing show. That's all a little bit up in the air, but I know we are contemplating moving to twilight on Thursdays and Fridays for a waging perspective. Our market study right now shows that we are much more popular in the United States with those twilight cards, and it mixes in well with the California cards. So what I expect, we may be looking at twilight racing on both Thursdays and Fridays, and then of course the regular times on Saturday and Sunday.
We'll be looking to put together a nice plan promoting Woodbine. Nothing's finalized yet, but we're going to be covering it, I'm sure, as we have the last few years. So we'll keep listeners abreast of those post times and any special promotions that are going on as a result. You've mentioned the two big days I wanted to follow up with you about. Queen's Plate being run on a Sunday in August again, which I love because it gives me the opportunity to fly up, hopefully, Sunday morning and get there in person. Is this August, the August Queen's Plate was successful enough? Is this going to be the plan from here on out, or do you see it moving back to its traditional late June date at some point?
Well, at this time, we like where it's at. I always hesitate in this game to say, never say never, but given the success from a wagering standpoint, field size, everything seemed to click last August, and I'm very comfortable where it's at. A little impacted, of course, by the pandemic. We still had a number of our big trainers that didn't go to Florida or New Orleans this year as they normally would. So this will give them the extra time. But my sense is that people are really happy with the August date. And in terms of Sunday, we also think Sunday's a good date. We'll have it to ourselves, so to speak. And we get some of those jockeys coming up from Saratoga at that time. So that certainly helps the day and the betting in the United States. The other thing is that, we've been so successful, the Ontario breeders selling in Kentucky. And there I'm hearing, you know, in addition to Messier, but I'm hearing of any number of Ontario breds that are popping up with a lot of promise right now racing in the United States. So it'll give them time to come up here and get acclimatized, maybe for the plate trial, which is the same day as the Canadian Oaks in July.
which and that is going to be a great day too, where you're going to be, I like the way the calendar, it's going to be feeding into the big days, all feeding into each other. It'll definitely give us a great opportunity to focus our coverage. So folks can, we encourage you, and a lot of people we have are playing Woodbine week in, week out. But even if you're going for the big days, you can really focus and follow those weekends and come out with knowledge that's going to help you cash some tickets, which I know is what our audience is all about. So
that's exactly right. And they get to become familiar with the horses. You know, I'm just talking off the top of my head here, but when you think about July 24th in Canada and the Canadian Oaks that day in the play trial, one thing that has definitely evolved, and it may, my only thought on it is that given the lower breed numbers and the lower number of horses in Canada, the fillies are every year extremely competitive for the Queen's Plate. So the Woodbine Oaks on July 24th is a major stepping stone and prep race into the Queen's Plate. And it has been. The fillies have been very successful. So what's so great about that weekend with the plate trial and the Oaks is the two races go a mile and an eighth back to back. And usually the girls run faster. So what that does is the owner of the filly says, oh boy, we got to give it a try now. We just ran a couple ticks quicker than the boys. And so it sets up the Queen's Plate almost for girls versus boys. And that's the way it's been in the last few years, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, that's definitely been a key form line. It's a great storyline to follow as well. And then with the plate and the undercard stakes on that day, setting up beautifully for the weekend with the three grade ones. Talk about key form lines, the Summer, the Natalma, the Woodbine Mile, all tying in to the Breeders' Cup, it seems, year in, year out. And I'll tell you what, that's a weekend. If you're thinking of traveling, if you're a horse player who wants to check out Woodbine, first of all, it's a great facility. We've had a lot of great days up there, not in a couple of years. Really looking forward to get back. But that's a weekend I'd say highlight it because of several reasons. Great racing. The weather in Toronto in September, I mean, I hope I'm not jinxing it here, but usually phenomenal. And I hope this will be the case again this year, but very easy sell to the non-racing partner because you've also got the Toronto Film Festival going on typically at the same time. So circle those days on your calendar. Who knows? Maybe at some point I can convince you guys to get a contest back on the calendar as well. Wouldn't that be fun? And yeah. It's a great weekend to think about heading up north and definitely one to look forward to. Do you know that the date offhand, Jim, for the Woodbine Mile this year?
Oh, sure. I'm just checking, but it's the 16th or it's the 17th. It'll be Saturday, the 17th. And yes, the Toronto Film Festival, which is one of the great film festivals in the world now. And for those who aren't the film going types, a big crossover between horse racing and baseball. And I expect the Yankees are going to be in a pennant race right about then with the Blue Jays. So let's hope I'm right on that too.
I've still never been to a Blue Jays game. May have to correct that injustice this year as well. Jim, so great having you on. We'll have you back periodically to what we did last year was great. We'd have you on early in the week of the big weeks. You give us the lay of the land, let us know how the owning and breeding operation is going and who knows if it all goes right, maybe you can look to go back to back in the Sovereign Awards. Great having you on air here today, my friend, and I look forward to chatting soon.
Thrilled to be on. Look forward to talking again soon. Take care and all the best.
Cheers, Jim. Speaking of Woodbine, our next guest works there. We sometimes talk about things related to Woodbine, but mostly we talk about the JRA races that happen on Saturday nights. Very excited to welcome back to the show, Klaus Ebner. Klaus, how are things?
Good, Pete. How are you?
I'm doing great. Let's start with the day job, as it were. How excited are you to have, as you said off air, Woodbine starting for the first time in a couple of years on the day when it's actually supposed to start?
Yeah, it's I think for all of us, we're kind of just breathing a bit of a sigh of relief. Let's just get it started, and we'll kind of work from there towards our big days in the year being the Queen's Plate, Woodbine Mile. Obviously the harness is still going strong, so we'll continue to push forward there on the Mohawk side. But yeah, no, it's just I'm back into work on Saturday to kind of welcome some of our fans back for opening day. So, a part of me is just like, that's cool. Cause it kind of just, you get that kind of feeling going in you and you're just like, nothing like going to a racetrack and it being your home racetrack and the one you've grown up with to just kind of restart racing for the year. And these are always, positive things for everyone, right?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned Harness. I don't plug enough on this show the fact that we have a sister show that covers Mohawk pretty extensively and the harness world in general. First Over with Edison Hatter. He's doing a great job. Subscribe to that on iTunes if you're interested in standardbreds. And I'll say this, if you're not aware of what the pools look like up there, this is stuff that a thoroughbred player, even if you've never played harness racing before, it's worth checking out, I think, to see if it captures your fancy because there's some real money being bet and some real opportunities. I know, Klaus, you follow racing all around the world. I assume you've got some standard bred chops as well.
Well, I don't know if we spoke about this, Pete, but I actually own harness horses. So, in terms of the handicapping side, I can't say I'm that great. I leave that to Robert Reed and those people that, and Edison, that's really can handicap the game. I bet on my own horses. I bet on harness racing the big days. But, on the owning side, if you're an owner, harness is really the way to go, in my opinion, in horse racing because, your horses run every week for the most part, right? So you have a chance to earn a paycheck every, you can run four times in a month, five times in a month sometimes, if depending on how many days you have in the month. So the opportunity is there to at least, pay for themselves if you're a harness owner, that's for sure.
A lot of action and a lot of fun and a chance to cash some checks. Let's talk about your stated purpose on the show. The JRA race is Saturday night. Folks can get much more coverage on the day, typically late afternoon on a Saturday over at inthemoneypodcast.com. You'll have the opportunity to get free past performances as well as analysis from Klaus and the team. What do we have to look forward to this Saturday?
Yeah, so this Saturday, Pete, is the running of the 2000 Japanese 2000 Guineas, the Satsuki Show. So we want to talk quickly about the wagering side. Is we do have a high five carryover. That's for the big race. So we have the top five horses in the race. Just because last week, the favorites, and we'll get into that a little bit with this race, but the favorites last week just, they didn't really show per se. We had a 15-1 over a 6-1 over a 15-1 shot. Those are the three finishers in the race. That just shows you what can happen in Japan with the field being wide open. I think it's the same in this case, in this event, this weekend. There are a few, if you want to call them hype horses coming in. And it's interesting because the hype horses, at least that I feel, in the form of Equinox and a horse called Desierto, both drew into post 16 and 18. So this is very reminiscent of last week, where two of the top choices were also drawn in 16 and 18. Both of those horses, they fired their shot, but didn't win the race. And sure enough, yet again, we have two of the sort of more preferred horses on the very far outside of the field. It is a two-turn race, so I don't think it'd be as much of a concern. But especially in the form of Equinox, 18 is a pretty bad post. I think there was one winner from 18 in the past 10 years, so it's not impossible, much like that we had, sort of those weird posts. But, for us, it's just a case of trying to figure out and diving into the mess and just to find out a winner there. But yeah, it's a very competitive field. In the form of Desierto, this horse could be a freak. I saw his training video this past week, and I've never seen this before in Japanese racing, or at least in the sort of workout videos, because, I follow another gentleman called Graham Pavey, Long Ball to No One, those of you that don't know, on Twitter. He posts a lot of the workout videos for these horses coming to these races. I like seeing them. Do I kind of judge everything off these workout videos? No, but it's good to kind of see and get a gauge in terms of who's coming into the race in the right way, much like you would for Derby or any sort of event, looking for horses that are on the right side of the fitness peak, if you will. And this horse is really is a freak. He really in his training video, I've never seen this before. The exercise rider was actually standing up in his stirrups, holding the reins while this horse was just blitzing down the course. And it wasn't uncontrolled. It was just, a horse doing his work. And he finished up his last workout very quickly. So like I said, this horse could be a freak. I don't know what sort of odds you'll see on him. He's 3-for-3. He made his turf debut last time out, won by two lengths. He's by Dre Fong, so that's why he started his career on the dirt. But then won his listed stakes company at debut last time out in 1.25, 3 for 3. So, yeah, it's caught everyone's attention. But, you know, for my selections, Pete, I'm going to go with the inside horses. There are a few horses on the inside. We'll start with one, the horse through the rail. So not that great, but, you know, I think that's fine. That's a horse called Denon Beluga. 2 for 2 for this one. Did win the Grade 3 Kyoto News High last time out. Son of Hearts Cry. And have a Tisway mare. So I don't see this horse having any sort of issue with 1.25. Should sit the perfect trip in behind horses. And if good enough, has, you know, every chance to make it, you know, a winning effort here. Another one looking at is a horse that's really undefeated and also raising a lot of buzz. And that's a horse called Ask Victor Moore. So by a deep impact out of a Rainbow Quest mare. So another one that surely shouldn't have any issue with distance. 2 for 2 at, races that are from 1800 to 1.25, which is, you know, so we'll say 1.125 to 1.25. And the most important thing for me that I like about Ask Victor Moore is this horse is 3 for 3 at the race course being Nakayama. He didn't win one of the main preps for this, that being the Yayoi Show, beating Doduce, who was the 2-year-old horse of the year last year. So Ask Victor Moore has gone from strength to strength, and has made really 2022 his own so far, winning both of his races, including that prep. Again, likes Nakayama, and I think a big shot in here. And, you know, another horse that's it's sort of on the inside as well that I really do like, and that's the horse in the form of Killer Ability. Another ton of Deep Impact. So those of you don't know, this may be one of the last chances for Deep Impact. He passed away a couple of years ago, 2019, I believe. So we're starting to see the very last of his crops, and that's very sad to see, but it's just the sad reality of everything with life. This horse won the Hopeful Stakes as a 2-year-old. So he's really making his 3-year-old debut. And, you know, those of you saying, well, hey, you know, is that a bad thing? Well, not necessarily. We have seen horses come back from winning the Hopeful to win this event, one being Contrail, for instance. So he went from the Hopeful Stakes to the Satsuki Show route with no issues. Another one who's won at Nakayama, he won the Hopeful at the same course and distance as a 2-year-old. And really one that I think has more than enough room to improve. It is by the American bred Killer Graces, who's the mare by Congaree. So another who should really enjoy the 1.25. So, yeah, Pete, just to summarize everything, if this race is pretty wide open.
It sounds great. It sounds like it's going to be one to definitely be paying attention to. It should be an important form line going forward. Again, you're going to have full picks and analysis on InTheMoneyPodcast.com on Saturday. But just want to ask you, and if you don't have an answer to this, that's fine. I didn't prep you for it. But, you know, you mentioned that carryover in the Super High Five. Do you have any advice on wagering strategy for a bet like that in a race that's this open?
So you're right. So what I normally do in the pick fives myself, so there's two forms of reference here. So the early races are tougher than the late races in Japan. So we do have two pick fives. You have early one starting in the first race. Then we also have the late one starting in race 8, which kind of covers off all your stakes races. So the late one, if we're looking at the late pick five, it's going to be a lot more formful. So what I tend to do is I'll go 1 or 2 deep in races 8, 9, 10, and then I'll spread a lot. In this case here, just because this race is wide open, I'm going to spread a lot in this race and kind of cover my bases with, you know, 4 to 5 horses. So I may do a, you know, like a 2 by 2 by 3 by 5 by 1 or 2 in the last race. So that's usually what I would do in these sort of races myself to kind of keep my ticket at a lower cost. And the bonus we do have is the fact that there is a 20-cent min on these pick fives. So you're allowed to invest, you know, you can get more combinations for a smaller amount. And, you know, last week for 20 cents, for instance, because we had such, you know, disparity in payouts, if you want to call it that, the late pick five last week paid over $8,000, for instance, for a 20-cent payout. So not bad at all. Again, if you can find the right combinations, but that's usually what I do in these cases, Pete. In the early pick five, for instance, for when I wager on JRA, you know, a couple weeks ago, I had a $800 ticket for $14 for a pick five. So it's not, again, it's we know the pool sizes. We're working our best. Obviously, you and I and everyone trying to promote Japan racing to, you know, get people to play these pools and increase these pool sizes. That's what we want at the end of the day. So the early races may not be as heavy, if you will. Their pool sizes may not be as strong as we would like. But you can still get paid pretty well for if your opinions are correct.
Good stuff. We appreciate your insights. Again, we'll look for more over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, and we'll have you on again soon, Klaus.
And one thing, Pete, before I let you go, please. I do want to. You did bring a bit of a tear to my eye when I saw that you picked Crown Pride as part of your Derby draft. So thank you for that. I send you a big heart for that one, and you got my level with that pick at least.
Clearly the choice at that point in the draft, and a horse that there's going to be a lot more to talk about. I've probably done more digging on that speed figure than on any race I've ever looked at. I've gotten great information from analysts all over the world, and it all comes down to the idea that it's a really, really hard race to make a figure for. But there's a case to be made that it's not too far out of what it might take to at least be competitive in a race like the Derby. But we'll talk about that on other shows, my friend. I'm glad you appreciated that. That one was for you.
Thanks very much, Pete. Have a good weekend.
All right, good stuff. That is going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank Klaus one more time. We'll thank Eric Solomon, Philip Shelton, Matt Bernier, producer Craig. We made him very busy this week, and we always appreciate his efforts as well. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Oh, one more thank you to the Cummings family for letting me steal their dining room table for the last couple hours. We got to thank them as well. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kitchen. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos.